Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, bonjour, no, so the corrupt, guten tag, half a day, ciao, vivi, va, kat, bang, jai, janendra, salam, shalom, peace. Now, go vegan. Peace how? Go vegan. From the left coast of the genetically mutated McNugget Pharmaceutical Vivisection Prison Kilitary Industrial Corp Nation, in the cheese-covered post-constitutional bankster bankrupt corruptocracy, mockracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, home of Uncle Salmonella, where they sure eat a lot of animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And I built this radio show. You didn't. I built this radio show. Let's just make that clear right from the start. Of course, unless you made a donation to help us pay for radio airtime, or you've been a sponsor and advertised your vegan and cruelty-free products and services, but I built this radio show, and it's on for 11 years, as heard on Air America. And happy Labor Day weekend, and of course here in America, we celebrate Labor Day by taking a day off from work, because we love our job so much. You think you hate your job? I mean, be glad that you don't have this one. I'm sure the folks who work in this industry are very happy to have a day off. One of the most hated jobs, one of the most dangerous jobs, is that of slaughterhouse worker, the $10 an hour job with a pretty much 100% turnover rate that you'll find in so many meatpacking plants. The combination of loud noise and sharp tools and dangerous machinery make it one of the most dangerous jobs in the country. And referring to a Government Accountability Office report, well, the slaughterhouse and meatpacking industry has one of the highest rates of injury and illness anywhere. It's wet, it's dark, it's slippery. There are extreme temperatures, refrigeration ranging from 0 degrees to 40 degrees Fahrenheit. The work is physically demanding and repetitive, requiring standing in place for long periods of time. Workers responsible for cleaning have to deal with strong chemicals and hot pressurized water and poor visibility from steam. It's basically your hell on earth. Workers often suffer cuts and burns and repetitive stress injuries, injuries from falls, fractures, even amputations occur. Workers often are in poor ventilation. They become ill because of exposure to chemicals and blood and fecal matter. Fast disassembly lines, fast speeds make conditions even more hazardous. Sometimes 300 cows come down the line each hour. And the process at the slaughterhouse is that animals are forced to the kill floor for their beheading and evisceration, after which the carcass of the murder victim is chilled and taken to the cutting floor to be sliced into smaller sections. And the newer process of so-called meat production have the workers cutting the bodies into small vacuum-packed portions, a so-called meat ready to ship to the supermarket for the death eaters who will buy them. This assembly line or disassembly line operation requires constant repetitive motions for workers, with all the mechanization of the animal killing industries. Still, much of the work is done by hand, particularly when the animals vary in size and shape and weight. And the actual murder and evisceration and cutting are generally done by hand, with knives. Some cutters have to make 5 cuts every 15 seconds. Workers are often handling or in close proximity to sources of infectious diseases that can be animal tissue and organs, and pathogens often infect workers through inhalation or from open abrasions. Viruses, bacteria, salmonella. Workers are also exposed to hydrogen sulfide, methane, and carbon dioxide released from decomposing manure, chemicals such as ammonia and freon. You would actually eat something produced at a filthy, violent crime scene like this? How appetizing the start of your meat and dairy products must sound, huh? Meat is hazardous to your health and hazardous to the slaughterhouse worker, who can be injured by animals when unloading them and forcing them into the plant. If stunning and attempted murder go wrong, then you know there are so many mishaps with knives and flailing animals and all of these. They're called neighbor cuts. You know, workers in overcrowded working conditions, they get neighbor cuts. You know, like friendly fire. Workers often experience respiratory irritation with cases of asphyxiation reported from exposure to pathogenic substances. They've drowned in manure pits, and as the animals thrash, and you know, workers wind up getting broken arms and permanent disfigurement, often death. Bacterial contact often leads to fever and headaches, diarrhea, vomiting, kidney damage. Who wouldn't want a day off from this, huh? Happy Labor Day, slaughterhouse workers. The workers often suffer back injuries and strains and sprains and tears and hernias and fatigue. Fingers, hands, and limbs can be severed by the machinery that grinds and mixes. Workers can be burned by the heat sealant machines when wrapping meat products. Some records from Iowa show that 51% of meatpacking employees suffer illness or injury every year, compared to 16% of all manufacturing employees and 10% of all full-time employees. Jennifer Dillard of Slaughterhouse wrote A Slaughterhouse Nightmare, Psychological Harm Suffered by Slaughterhouse Employees and the Possibility of Redress Through Legal Reform. She wrote this at the Georgetown University Law Center and says that slaughterhouse workers, quote, view on a daily basis large-scale violence and death that most of the American population will never have to encounter. While the average American will never see the inside of a slaughterhouse and may be able to eat a hamburger without confronting the pain and terror of a beef cow's final moments, thousands of slaughterhouse workers across the country face that troubling predicament every day, creating an employment situation ripe for psychological problems. What do slaughterhouse workers have to do? I mean, it ranges from brutal prodding and handling to the skinning and boiling of fully conscious individuals. Slaughterhouse workers must suffer psychological trauma. Referencing a study, The Psychological Stress of Killing, Rachel McNair suggests that slaughterhouse workers suffer from perpetration-induced traumatic stress. PITS, a disorder resulting from one being the creator of a traumatic situation for a victim, with symptoms including drug and alcohol abuse, anxiety, panic, depression, increased paranoia, sense of disintegration, disassociation, amnesia, nightmares, trauma normally associated with combat veterans, executioners, and Nazis, but applicable to slaughterhouse workers. And another form of perpetration-induced traumatic stress is known as doubling. This psychological phenomenon is discussed in the publication The Nazi Doctors, where in doubling. Nazi doctors in concentration camps double themselves into two functioning wholes or cells. The new self violates the morals of the original self, so that an Auschwitz doctor could plan and implement serial killing on behalf of an evil project, while the prior self acts as the same husband, father, son that he was prior to concentration camp activities. The dubious morality of slaughterhouse employment creates those similar effects of doubling, creating a second self doing what the first self never would. Studies show that farmers do not consider animals merely working tools and do face a major disconnect between the natural identification with animals as living beings and their treatment of animals as a means to an end. In response to this disconnect, many workers develop a disdain for the animals and are likely to treat them more cruelly. Empathy suppression is a factor in psychological stress. 85% of meat eaters in one study said that they could never kill an animal to obtain meat. So imagine the psychological damage of violating one's moral objection to killing and violating it repeatedly, every day, on the job. No wonder there's a 100% turnover rate. So, a sociological analysis by Amy Fitzgerald found that counties with slaughterhouses have higher arrest levels for sex offenses and more frequent reports of murder, rape, violence against women and children, aggravated assault, robbery, burglary, larceny, motor vehicle theft, and arson. Some courts have found prior slaughterhouse employment of defendants to be relevant in criminal trials. So there you have it, this Labor Day. It's time to put those laborers out of a job, how painful it is for them to go to work and how painful it is for the animals. So I'd say the end of slaughterhouse labor would be if we all were to go vegan. Let's do it. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, listener supported. Please make a tax-deductible donation so that we can buy airtime. You can do so at goveganradio.com. Coming up on today's program, we have Marion Nessel, we will be talking about the Farm Bill, and that will be coming up on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden.
Your support of the International Fund for Africa goes to direct aid for human babies and animals in need in Africa. Compassion for all beings is exemplified by the work of the International Fund for Africa, delivering critically needed medical services from the introduction of neonatal care in Ethiopia to the Homeless Animals Project for dogs, from the Rural Health and Development Project to the Veterinary Medicine Hospital Project, and promoting veganism as the best way to help people, animals, and the environment of Africa, the International Fund for Africa is leading the way. Its dynamic president, Dr. Antenna Roba, is a Houston emergency room physician who sees the deadly health effects of the standard African-American diet of animal products, and then goes home to Africa to witness the deadly environmental effects of the standard African-American diet there, as meat and dairy-based climate change devastates the continent. The message from the International Fund for Africa is, go vegan, Africa. No GMOs, no factory farms. Find out how you can help the International Fund for Africa help people and animals in Africa. Visit ifundafrica.org. Stop starvation. Save the environment. Visit ifundafrica.org. Do you know the way to eat in San Jose? A special place, no meat, dairy, fish, or eggs in San Jose. Experience Vegetarian House, 100% organic vegan restaurant, 520 East Santa Clara Street, downtown San Jose. A favorite fine dining establishment since 1994, featuring a spectacular international menu embracing the cuisines of China, India, Thailand, Vietnam, the Middle East, Europe, and the Americas. Appetizers, soups, salads, entrees, and desserts that you simply must experience. Enjoy freshly squeezed organic fruit and vegetable juices. Committed to your fine dining experience, your health, compassion for animals, and the environment, Vegetarian House is powered by rooftop solar panels. Waste is composted or recycled when possible, and all to-go packaging can be composted or is biodegradable. The cuisine at Vegetarian House is GMO-free and organic. See the menu at vegetarianhouse.us. Experience one of the world's best 100% vegan organic restaurants. You'll love the bakery items. Raw desserts are available too. Have your next event catered by Vegetarian House. Whether you need power box lunches or it's a full banquet, call 408-292-3798. Vegetarian House. Now you know the way to eat in San Jose. 520 East Santa Clara Street in San Jose. VegetarianHouse.us. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden would like to express its appreciation to Vegetarian House for its ongoing sponsorship of our radio program. To advertise your vegan and cruelty-free products, email bob@goveganradio.com. RecipeFactory.net. Create more delicious, healthful, and affordable meals. Visit RecipeFactory.net, where you can analyze existing recipes or create new ones. Customize to use or avoid specific ingredients. Meet your dietary, aesthetic, and budgetary requirements. Check complete protein, inflammation, and glycemic load. Create food and meal substitutes. Upload your recipes and download others. Visit RecipeFactory.net. Create at RecipeFactory.net.
KCAA.
And we continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, GoVeganRadio.com. I didn't do too well on the lighting for the video today, so we're obviously not on the professional movie set or on the stage at Viva La Vegan grocery store where we've been doing many programs live. Well, today I am honored to have Marion Nessel on the program. Marion Nessel, PhD, is Paulette Goddard Professor in the Department of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health, the department that she chaired from 1988 to 2003, and professor of sociology at New York University. She has been associate dean of the University of California, San Francisco, where she taught nutrition to medical students, residents, and practicing physicians. How unusual, doctors studying nutrition. And from 1986 to 88, Dr. Nessel served as senior nutrition policy advisor in the Department of Health and Human Services and managing editor of the 1988 Surgeon General's Report on Nutrition and Health. She has been a member of the FDA Food Advisory Committee and Science Board, the USDA Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee, and American Cancer Society Committee's issuing dietary guidelines for cancer prevention. She is also the author of Food Politics, How the Food Industry Influences Nutrition and Health, also Safe Food, the Politics of Food Safety, and What to Eat, and Pet Food Politics, the Chihuahua in the Coal Mine, and her new book is Why Calories Count, From Science to Politics. And she also writes a monthly Food Matters column for the San Francisco Chronicle and blogs at foodpolitics.com and for The Atlantic. And with such a lengthy resume, we're out of time. So thank you for being with us today, Dr. Nessel. It was a pleasure having you here.
It was a pleasure to be here, and what a nice
How are you, Dr. Nessel?
Thank you. I'm fine.
I'm a little low in the volume in my headphones, I might say, Joe, so I don't know if you can boost the volume a little bit. Dr. Nessel, I mean, a lot of subject matter that we could cover today, but what I would like to look at would be the Farm Bill. The Farm Bill, maybe most Americans have really never even heard of the Farm Bill. which only happens to be the primary agriculture and food policy instrument of the U.S. federal government. So, Dr. Nessel, if for those of us not too familiar with the Farm Bill, could you tell us what it is and what it does?
Absolutely. I mean, there are reasons why nobody's familiar with it. To put it bluntly, nobody understands it. It's enormous. The 2008 Farm Bill is 663 pages of small type. It's not really a coherent policy. It's not as if our elected legislators sat down at a conference table and said, let's design a food system that's going to be good for the American public, good for farmers, and good for our society as a whole. How do we go about doing that? That's not how it worked at all. It's totally incremental, and it's best thought of as a collection of literally hundreds and hundreds of separate programs benefiting from federal largesse, each one with its own constituency, its own lobbyists, and its own set of people who are fighting for and against it. So what it does is it pits different parts of the agricultural system against each other to try to get their share of federal taxpayer money. And that's really what it's about.
Mm-hmm. And how often do we have a farm bill?
Well, they're roughly every 5 years. It started in the 1930s out of a real need to try to support farmers who were going out of business because it was the Depression and nobody had any money to buy anything. And they were wasting their food and having to destroy it because they couldn't sell it. And so the government got involved and started a system of supports to deal with that emergency. But those supports were so popular that farmers eventually began to view them as entitlements. And that was okay when farms were small. But as agriculture got bigger and bigger and bigger and more industrial, the system really changed. And it's now one that rewards big over small, that rewards corn and soybeans rather than fruits and vegetables, so it doesn't work to support federal health policy. And it's really out of date, anachronistic, but has so much power invested in it from big agriculture that it's very, very difficult to change. And you can see the results of that difficulty in Congress now where they can't even get the thing passed.
So it's what is the status of it now? Is there a bill being considered right now? When is it supposed to come to a vote? And what are the major forces pulling and pushing on it?
Well, the Agriculture Committee, the Senate Agriculture Committee, came out with a draft bill several months ago. And that's been put forward as a basis for discussion. It's passed in the Senate. But the House has yet to do anything about the bill, in part because of the enormous division in the country about how tax money is going to be spent. For Republicans who are very focused on budget cutting, the Farm Bill is a really great place to cut. I should mention that it's close to $100 billion a year in money that goes to that is allocated under that bill. And one of the really, really weird things about it is that 80% of that money goes to support the what used to be called the food stamp program and is now called SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which cost American taxpayers $72 billion last year.
So how much money is spent under the Farm Bill on an annual basis?
It's close to $100 billion. It was, there's about, you know, I mean, give or take a few billion here or there. Last year, the food stamp program cost $72 billion, and there was about another $20 billion that went for agricultural support. And that means direct payments to farmers, some of whom farm and some of whom don't farm, insurance payments, and conservation. And so the budget cutters are looking for ways to cut that, and they can cut they can cut direct payments and do some other things to kind of reduce the amount that goes to large farmers. But once they get into cutting food stamps, they're up against political forces that are very concerned about what's happening with the poor in this country, given that there's so much job loss and the economy is so bad. 46 million Americans got food stamp benefits last year. I mean, this isn't trivial. So you have one of the big questions, of course, is what are food stamps doing in the Farm Bill? And they're in the Farm Bill because of classic log rolling. They got there because the agricultural people were unable to get agricultural supports passed because they didn't have enough votes to do that. There aren't that many farm states left in this country that do big agriculture. And so they made a deal with the people who were concerned about the fate of poor people in large cities and put the whole thing together so it all happened.